Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and completely online process. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. This week, deadly sniper fire in Dallas, wrenching police shooting videos, no charges for Hillary Clinton, Trump clashes with Republican senators, police officers killed by snipers in Dallas as a peaceful Black Lives Matter protest wound down. Witness Andrea Thomas.
I knew it was gunshots, but I just remember thinking, I'm watching the protesters walk down the street, and then all of a sudden, it's just rapid fire.
Baton Rouge and the aftermath of a police shooting in Minnesota captured on video after her boyfriend, Philando Castile, was shot. Diamond Reynolds streamed the scene to Facebook.
Told him not to reach for it. I told him to get his hand open.
You told him to get his ID, sir, and his driver's license. Oh, my God, please don't tell me he's dead.
And no charges for Hillary Clinton for her use of private email servers during her time as Secretary of State. But FBI Director James Comey had a sharp rebuke.
Although we did not find clear evidence that Secretary Clinton or her colleagues intended to violate laws governing the handling of classified information, there is evidence that they were extremely careless in their handling of very sensitive, highly classified information.
This hour, On Point, our weekly news roundtable with Megan Murphy of Bloomberg News, Del Quinton Wilbur of the Los Angeles Times, and On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. How are you taking on board the horror in Dallas, the videos from Baton Rouge, from Minnesota? What are we facing here? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Or join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Washington is Megan Murphy, Washington Bureau Chief for Bloomberg News. Megan Murphy, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks so much.
Also from Washington, Del Quinton Wilbur joins us. He covers the Department of Justice for the LA Times. Del, welcome back to you as well.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And from Hanover, New Hampshire, Jack Beatty joins us. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, Megan, and Del.
Talk about a terrible week. Here's some sound out of Dallas last night. Garrett Watts was at the protest in Dallas when shots were fired. He talked with the CBS station there, KTVT, about the crowd's reaction.
Shots start popping off, rapid fire. I assume it's fireworks. Everybody breaks and starts sprinting in different directions. We had people jumping over the fences.
Kiki McDonald was there at the protest, talked to AP. She was there when the shots erupted, said it's hard to understand the shooting. The point, she said.
It's chaotic. I mean, we shouldn't have to. This is a peaceful rally. We shouldn't have to result in violence for it to basically make a statement. I mean, that's what this rally was for. Black Lives Matter. What's the point of you shooting other people?
What's the point of shooting other people? Dallas Police Chief David Brown, at a press conference this morning, shared what one of the suspects told a hostage negotiator during a standoff in Dallas in the parking garage.
He wanted to kill officers. And he expressed killing white people. He expressed killing white officers. He expressed anger for Black Lives Matter. None of that makes sense. None of that is a reason, a legitimate reason, to do harm to anyone.
12 police officers shot by snipers, 2 civilians, 5 officers dead. As we speak, the whole picture not yet clear, though one of the suspected or one of the guys believed to be one of the shooters killed by a robot bomb in that parking garage. Del Quinton Wilbur, do you have any updates on what's coming out of Dallas about who may have been behind this and why?
Yeah, the LA Times just reported. I reported that they identified the gunman as Micah X. Johnson. He lives in the Dallas area. He's 25. He has no known terror ties and no criminal record, which is interesting. And we heard the Dallas police chief talk about the guy's, you know, inspiration for wanting to do this kind of massacre, you know, and what he felt about it.
So only one at this point. Now, we heard it was coordinated, which suggests more than one. Do we know anything more about the number of people who may have been involved?
You know, the man claimed to police that he was alone, and when you're in shooting situations like that, a lot of people could think more people are involved, because when you're in tall buildings in areas like this, there's an echo effect, you know, where you think there are others involved. And I think they're still trying to scramble around and figure out, you know, who may have helped him, who did what. If we think back to a few months ago when the Prince George's, I wrote a book about the Prince George's County Homicide Squad called A Good Month for Murder, and their homicide squad unit was attacked, well, the building next door was attacked by a gunman who was bent on having, you know, dying by suicide by cop. This was a couple months ago, and he went and shot up the building and got killed himself by the police, and then a police officer was killed by friendly fire, but his, like, brothers were videotaping the incident. And so we don't know, I guess the point is, we don't know, like, did the guy have assistance? Were people helping him? Were other people involved in the shooting? I think that's what they're all trying to figure out right now.
Unbelievable toll of dead and wounded here in Dallas at the end of a Black Lives Matter rally. Megan Murphy, a kind of, I mean, who wants to see it this way? But there's a kind of grotesque symmetry here, if you want to look at it that way. Earlier in the week, these shootings of black men by police. We do not know the whole story in those shootings, but we have all practically at this point seen video, which was deeply wrenching, deeply disturbing. And Megan, you've got these, apparently, at least this one shooter coming out in Dallas suggesting a kind of vengeance here.
Certainly grotesque symmetry in the words you use, but also just a staggering turn of events and a real moment now that we're in about the depths that race relations appear to have plumbed now. And the question I think that is just on everyone's minds is what can be done, not in terms so much of gun control, about access to weapons, about Black Lives Matter, but where is the healing going to begin in all of these communities, in Louisiana, in Minnesota, now in Dallas? What steps can actually be taken? And president has come so far on this issue, and the next president is going to be inheriting this framework, and it does really pose the question of, will this be a turning point for the good or a turning point for the worse?
We've got to get on top of this. Here's the end of the first video release of the shooting death of Alton Sterling. This is in Baton Rouge, as bystanders react to what they've just seen. He's pinned to the ground, and bang, 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 shot, ultimately died. Here was the response from, I guess it was kind of inside the car of the bystander who shot the video. Here it is.
Oh, my God. They shot him?
In Louisiana, in Minneapolis, or St. Paul, in Minnesota, after boyfriend Philando Castile was shot by a police officer during a traffic stop on Wednesday, Diamond Reynolds, goes by Lavish on Facebook, began streaming video immediately after the shots were fired to Facebook.
Please don't tell me that he's gone. Please, officer, don't tell me that you just did this to him. You shot four bullets into him, sir. He was just getting his license and registration, sir.
She said he was just trying to pull it out of his pocket. We know how that ended. He's dead. Jack Beatty, this week is just coming down like a ton of bricks on everyone here. Worst for those who've died. And five police officers in one night. I have no memory of something like that, Jack.
No, apparently it's the worst, the most police officers killed since 9/11. You know, the Washington Post this morning has a big takeout on police shootings. And they're running higher this year than last year.
Shootings by police?
By police. Okay. 465 in the first 6 months of 2015, 491 the first 6 months of this year, 6% increase. Blacks shot at 2.5 times the rate of whites, less than 10% unarmed, a quarter of the victims mentally ill. Now, 76 were on video in 2015, 105 on video this year. More video, but also more shooting. And most disturbing of all, fatal shootings of black women. There are now more of those thus far this year in the whole of last year. So not progress, according to the numbers.
I mean, all right. Those numbers aren't good. On the other hand, Del Quinton Wilbert, when you hear that the officer in Minnesota, I mean, the man is dead, Philando Castile, but the officer sounded freaked out after that shooting. There's a nine-minute Facebook feed, and you can hear him swearing in the background in a kind of anguish. It leads us to wonder, what is he thinking at that moment? How fearful is he, and why exactly?
Well, you know, when I did my book, I spent 6 months with the homicide squad, and they investigated police shootings, and they're awful. I mean, this officer took someone's life, right? This is
yes.
not a TV or a video game,
no.
right? That's a real person who's dead in front of them, and you have to make a decision in a split second. Now, we invest a lot of responsibility, massive amounts of responsibility in people who are 25 and younger who carry weapons and can take someone's life in a split second, right?
Yeah.
And I don't want, when I was 25 or 24, could I handle that kind of responsibility? I don't know. But then they're put in situations where they have to make these gut decisions. And miscommunication happens on the street. And he pulls this car over, and would it have been different if there was a different driver, a white driver, or a, you know, Hispanic driver, or a female driver? I don't know. But something happened in that interaction where the guy said, or thought, felt he was reaching for a gun. He wasn't going to just, most cops, except for some outlandish cases like that one in South Carolina, don't just cold execute people.
Yeah.
This stuff all happens in that split second. And so people say, oh, charge the officer with the crime. And I don't know if our social compact works that way. Like, every mistake that led up to that moment is not relevant in the criminal charging. It's very complicated. It all comes down to what happened in that split second where he made that decision.
But you can't expect people
a lot more. But what I'm saying is they can invest a lot more in training and stuff to lead up to that. But his anguish is real. I mean, I met cops who've taken people's lives, and they never get over it. The life they take changes theirs too. That doesn't. It's all tragic.
But the anguish of that man's loved ones in that car, the 4-year-old girl in that car, the son in Baton Rouge.
I know.
And now, of all these people who have lost husbands, brothers, sons in Dallas, 5 police dead in one night. And the latest headlines are saying one shooter, CNN headlines saying the shooter acted alone, trying to get our heads around this and how those gunshots may have echoed there in the streets of Dallas. We have a lot to look at here. I'm very grateful that all of you are with us. Del Quinton Wilbur, covering the Department of Justice for the Los Angeles Times. Megan Murphy, Washington Bureau Chief for Bloomberg News. Jack Beatty. We're looking at this terrible week. Deadly sniper fire in Dallas. Police shooting videos. A rebuke, no charges for Hillary Clinton. We'll look at that. Donald Trump clashing with Republican senators. You can join us. What is happening with race and policing in America today? Are you afraid for the future? After Dallas, the mass killing of police there, are you still roiling over Baton Rouge, over Minnesota? How do we come to grips with our crisis of race and criminal justice? Too much mourning this week, and it's real. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are looking at a week in the news, a terrible week in the news. Deadly sniper fire last night in Dallas. Police shooting videos, one after another this week coming out. A rebuke, no charges for Hillary Clinton. A tough rebuke. Donald Trump clashing with Republican senators in Washington. We'll look at that and more. Del Quinton Wilbur is with us from the Los Angeles Times, covers the Justice Department. The Baton Rouge case has landed right in their lap. Megan Murphy is here, Washington Bureau Chief for Bloomberg News. Jack Beatty's here. You can join us. How do we come to grips with our crisis of race and criminal justice in this country? What is happening here? Lots of comment online. GQ says, all of this is so disturbing. Police killing civilians, civilians killing police. Chaos ensues when there's no accountability. America needs your prayers. It feels like that right now. And Doc writes on Twitter, my hope is America wakes up, listens to each other, realizes we have lost the common good. Together, we fix our ills. We don't know exactly the story out of those videos, but they looked awful. The Louisiana governor, John Bel Edwards, speaking to that when he talked with reporters, this was on Wednesday, talking about the shooting of Alton Sterling in Baton Rouge.
Based on the information that I have obtained from law enforcement, but certainly the footage that I observed of the video that was made available, I have very serious concerns. The video is disturbing, to say the least.
To say the least. And north, far north, here's Minnesota Governor Mark Dayton commenting on the death outside Minneapolis-St. Paul of Philando Castile.
Would this have happened if those passengers, the driver and the passenger, were white? I don't think it would have. So I'm forced to confront, and I think all of us in Minnesota are forced to confront, that this kind of racism exists, and that it's incumbent upon all of us to vow that we're going to do whatever we can to see that it doesn't happen, it doesn't continue to happen.
Two governors staring straight at this week, and no doubt Texas, we'll hear from governors there, the governor there as well. Callers, here, Sam in Natick, Massachusetts. Sam, thank you very much for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I have a question, unfortunately. The the epidemiology is telling us what we already know, and the statistics now is being confirmed with technology. The question is, how do we get passed through this? It's not go to go and grab every police officer you see in the street and prosecute them. No, that's not the answer. Majority of 99% of them or more are nice, pleasant people. The problem is that we have an engraved racism. I have been living here for the past 40 years, and I will tell you, racism has gotten worse.
Worse.
It's at work. It's at institutions. It's everywhere you go. It's everywhere you look. The problem is it has to be education. The federal government has to, you know, put money at universities and colleges and things to teach people how to get along together.
To go straight at racism, but you say the answer not to grab or shoot police. Sam, I appreciate your call very much. One more right here. Jamar in Charleston, South Carolina. Jamar, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yes. I just wanted to make a comment. I, myself, am an African-American man. I'm a physician, and I have lost two loved ones. My best friend was murdered by police in South Carolina. And my first cousin was murdered in Louisiana by police. And these were both unjustified killings. And these were years ago, 2004 and maybe in 2013.
Yeah.
And so I have firsthand account of the injustice at the hands of law enforcement in the United States. And what I'll say is it's easy for police officers to have their position to fight crime. However, as a physician who's had these incidents occur,
mm-hmm.
most of the time when I've interacted with police officers, they've been disrespectful. They haven't saw me as an individual. They saw me as a black person. And they judged immediately, and they had a standoff tone.
Mm-hmm.
However, I have encountered officers who have been helpful, who would give me the shirt off their back, who stopped on the side of the road if I had a flat tire and helped.
White officers, so, Jamar? White officers?
White officers.
Yep.
White officers,
yep.
Yes. And so
good.
Even having the negative life experiences that I have had and
yep.
been difficult,
mm-hmm.
I also know that it's not the person, it's not the job. It's the person behind the badge that needs to be vetted more vehemently.
What do you say about Dallas, Jamar? What do you say about Dallas?
I think it's a tragedy. It's the worst kind of tragedy that we can see in a civilized society. And in the same tone, the worst kind of tragedy that I've seen in my life in Minnesota, in Louisiana, in Sumter, South Carolina, these things are all tragedies. And until we have some meaningful dialogue, we acknowledge that there have been wrongs on all sides of the equation. And we also take this to not the tone of let's go to battle, but the tone of let's put down the gun and speak peacefully and respect each other peacefully. We will never have progress.
Jamar, I appreciate your call very much. Here was President Obama in Warsaw yesterday for the NATO summit there, his eye and mind pulled way back home, this reacting to the shootings in Dallas.
There has been a vicious, calculated, and despicable attack on law enforcement. Police in Dallas were on duty during doing their jobs, keeping people safe during peaceful protests.
Delquint and Wilbur, you covered the Department of Justice. Has there been a concerted effort from justice to try and get police forces on a better path here after Ferguson, after all the Black Lives Matter and all the uproar over this? Is there a program, a concerted effort? Is there an intense focus on this? Will there be more now?
I think that, you know, we've never seen a discussion like this about policing, like maybe in the nation's history, except for back in the 60s and 70s. I think, you know, Loretta Lynch and Holder, her predecessor, have been really pushing hard to figure out what the best way to address this is federally,
mm-hmm.
because this is like a mostly a local issue, right? The police departments are local in this country. And
yep.
so, you know, I was on a listening tour with her in Fayetteville, North Carolina, and she just was in L.A., and she's trying to gather a lot of stuff to figure out the best way to push out best methods, best practices, and like a global approach to it that's not just hodgepodge. Like right now, oh, they're now investigating Baton Rouge. Oh, now they're investigating Baltimore.
Yep.
Oh, now they're investigating Ferguson. Oh, now there's... And hopping around like that is very hard.
But is there a global approach? Can there be? How?
Well, I think, you know, it's a very complicated problem, right? And this goes back, your caller made a really good point. And, you know, you're investing, you're trying to, like, they're trying to shift the focus of police from being warrior mindset to guardian mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And along that path, you know, there's a lot of training and a lot of better screening of who should be a police officer. There are fundamental questions right now. Who should be a cop, right?
Yeah.
And why? And should they be, like, creative thinkers? Like, one of my book, when I was with these homicide detectives, the best homicide detectives were, like, dogged, creative, and they just got plain lucky all the time, right? And how do you find that person? How do you find a person who's both like, I'm gonna chew on that bone and I'm gonna go after that bone until I get the bone, but then can think of something outside the box to solve a problem, you know? And
yeah.
And do that. And I think they're trying to find a more cerebral police officer, like someone who's more measured and not just reactive. But it's hard when you're in a patrol car going from call to call to call. Like, we have a lot of police shootings, yes. But let's just put that in the total context of how many calls for service there are in the country,
yes,
where police interact with people every day. And, you know, those aren't, I don't know, but it's kind of like arguing, hey, the planes don't crash today, you know, but when one crashes, we want to know everything about it, and they shouldn't crash.
Well, we know a lot now because the video cameras are out there everywhere.
And it's the best thing to happen. When they brought video cameras into interrogation rooms, cops hated it. Detectives hated it. But in PG County, where I spent all this time with these officers, they loved these cameras. They recorded every move. And I think as time goes on, they're going to embrace body cameras. They're going to embrace the citizens who have cameras because it's going to document what happens. They're going to get used to it.
We'll see. Megan Murphy, Donald Trump put out a statement calling the Dallas shootings an attack on our country. How do you see this week? Both the first surge of videos coming in and then the terrible news out of Dallas. How do you see it flowing in to what is now the heart of the presidential campaign?
The statement that Donald Trump put out today was quite measured and was a significant change in the tone he's taken in reaction to these kinds of incidents. And I think that shows the influence that he's getting from more senior advisors in terms of how do you respond when these tragic events happen. And I think the question is now is, in a moment of chaos, particularly in racial relations, but also looking abroad at some of the terrorist incidents we're seeing, does this actually benefit Donald Trump in the sense of this is when people feel so insecure, not only domestically but internationally, is that the candidate they're going to gravitate towards? Or will Hillary Clinton be able to sort of capitalize on her position, her standing within the African-American community in particular, and be able to really project herself as the stable, calm leader? There's many people, I think, who have felt that actually these type of events benefit him and feed into this sense of unrest, sense of angst, this immense sense of angst we see playing out economically, you know, on different issues, but also this pure racial unrest, and that really things have gotten worse instead of getting better, as the caller just said. And I just wanted to pick up on the body cameras point. I mean, one other issue in this is just the access we have on social media and the sort of visceral impact of these kind of videos, the visceral impact of this kind of real-time playing on social media really puts you into these situations in a way that the vast majority of the country has never seen before and never had to grapple with. And I do think that many times where we do think things are getting so much worse, it's actually we are just having a front row window to these events as they unfold real time. They are devastating. They are brutal. They are violent. And it is like nothing we've seen before.
It challenges us to be better. I got Dallas police chief here praising what he calls countless officers, he said, who ran toward gunfire last night in Dallas with no chance to protect themselves to save civilians. It's a complicated scene. Elaine in Omaha, Nebraska. Elaine, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
I was born in Dallas, Texas, and grew up in Texas, so I had a lot of those ideas about black people are dangerous and, you know, thieves and things like that. But now I've lived in Omaha, Nebraska since 1972, and for 2.5 years I ran a program of my own making, and I facilitated it, called Black-White Dialogues, to bring black and white people together to create mutual understanding and respect. And it really changed my attitudes, and especially the work of Ms. Alexander, Michelle Alexander.
So what do you think about the events of this week, Elaine? What do you think about the events of this week?
Well, you know, first of all, policemen should not be trained to shoot to kill. If a person is resisting arrest, you don't have to be obeyed. You just wait, and you talk to them, and you de-escalate things. You don't shoot them and kill them. I mean, that's
That is certainly, though, what happened this week. That is definitely what happened this week. I mean, whatever the details of it, that is what happened. Elaine, I appreciate your call from Omaha. Enterprise, Alabama. Lawrence is calling. Lawrence, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, what do you know?
I want to make a comment about the color of authority. And
oftentimes their standard operating procedures. You know, these officers, they are the law, but they don't have a law understanding or law knowledge. You know, and the person who made the comment about looking for a good officer, a good detective,
yes,
and so forth,
mm-hmm,
the systematic, you know, now is live stream. We can see all these things happening. They don't know the law.
Mm. Can I speak?
Yes, please, Jack. Yes, please, Jack.
You know, I was looking into this. Policemen are trained 5 to 6 months at these academies, and then they have typically a week or so of in-service training every year. So that's their education. Only 1% of police departments require college degrees. Now, that's not to say a college degree is the answer to everything, but it does speak to Lawrence's point about, do the police know the law they're administrating? They're called professionals. Are they trained as professionals? You know, the president came out with an ambitious program of police reform, policing for the 21st century. We have spent, the United States has spent $6.5 million implementing those regulations. Meanwhile, the defense budget is $600 billion. There's something wrong here. If our domestic security is if we want to protect it and to protect our racial comity, surely we can spend more money on community training, on education for police, on de-escalating tactics, on all the things that apparently people coming out of police academies now have a better grasp. You know, they're better at than the veterans. They, strangely enough, it's found that veterans are more apt to be coercive than the people with the new training.
Well, we've seen a lot. The guys in Baton Rouge have been on the force for 3 and 4 years. I don't know how that qualifies, veteran or not. Gabe in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Gabe, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. So this is, you know, these last 2 days have been really, really horrible, and maybe, yep, in some ways shocking, but we should not be surprised. You know, we should expect this. And in some ways, it's amazing that, you know, the kind of horror that happened in Dallas hasn't happened before.
Expect
and,
this? You know, are you kidding me? Who wants to expect
this? Let me
continue. Yeah.
Please, Tom, let me continue.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have an opportunity here to really look at America's soul and what's really going on here and not the kind of myth we feed ourselves. And, you know, this country went from non-existent to one of the most incredible in history because it was built on slavery. And
well, there was
many,
a lot to it, but that was certainly right at the heart of the start.
There was a lot, but the way it could do it so quickly, it was built on slavery. And many of the very first police forces, and I think Jack can help me out here, you know, were formed to bring away runaway slaves. And when the slaves were freed, the police forces used ridiculous laws to put them in prison so they could go back on the
plantation. But it's 2016 now, Gabe. It's not Civil War time.
Exactly.
It's not
and
Jim Crow time.
Really, if we can look at the history, if we can really accept America for who we are, then we can,
yes,
deal with this. It's about education, like your previous,
yep,
caller said. I mean,
yes,
Tom, you had a caller yesterday who called in very upset, very angry.
Yes, out of South Carolina.
Something that happened.
Yep.
Like, happened.
He said he wanted severe consequences.
Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it is horrible, but we got to get real. That's the only way, like your previous callers have said too, that's the only way we're going to move forward on this.
Dave, Gabe, I appreciate your call very much. Del, last thought from you at the Department of Justice. What can we expect
from the Department of Justice,
yes,
today? Well, you know, Loretta
going
Lynch
forward.
Today, Loretta Lynch is going to be addressing the media. I assume she's going to do what Obama did, try to tamp down confrontation and de-escalate the situation. And I think there's going to be big pushes going forward on how best to address the whole entire criminal justice system. I mean, they're working also to try to get, you know, reduce the prison population of nonviolent offenders, and they want to improve community police relations. Like, there, one bad police shooting is one too many, and a lot of this goes back to like long stemmy histories, like it's going to take a lot to unwrap all of it. I mean, this is, you're talking about deep rooted psychological, sociological, and criminological, like of, you know, a tight ball. You're going to be peeling that about off for a long time.
Well, we need to see some very active addressing of this, and it won't all be federal, obviously, but there's got to be a role there as well. Del Quinton Wilbur covers the Justice Department for the Los Angeles Times. Thank you very much, Del, author of A Good Month for Murder. Thank you, Del.
Thank you.
Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. With Rocket Mortgage, you can get approved for a mortgage in minutes using a phone or tablet. This completely online process uses cutting-edge technology to make getting a mortgage more convenient than ever before. Now you can safely share bank statements and pay stubs with the touch of a button without the frustration of digging through stacks of financial documents. Info at quickenloans.com/onpoint, equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states, NMLS ConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. In other news this week, on Monday, after a 5-year, 1.7 billion mile journey, NASA's Juno spacecraft entered Jupiter's orbit. Here's Mission Control commentator Jennifer Delevan.
We have the tone for burn cutoff on Delta B. Roger, go move, Juno. Welcome to Jupiter.
Fox News CEO Roger Ailes under fire from former Fox News host Gretchen Carlson, who's filed a lawsuit against him. ABC's George Stephanopoulos.
Sexual harassment allegations against one of the most powerful men in television news. Fox News host Gretchen Carlson has filed a lawsuit against the network's CEO Roger Ailes, claiming she was fired because she refused his advances.
And giant champion of Holocaust remembrance and meaning, Nobel Peace Prize winner Elie Wiesel died this week at 87. He told NPR that it was his duty to never let those who suffered be forgotten.
To forget the victims would mean to kill them a second time. So I couldn't prevent their first death. I surely must be capable of saving them from a second death.
We're looking at a week in the news, and we are not walking away from Dallas. We're going to go back to Dallas in a few minutes to talk with Gromer Jeffers, a columnist for the Dallas Morning News. Megan Murphy with us as well, Washington Bureau Chief for Bloomberg News. Jack Beatty is here. What are you thinking this week? What do you think on the political front? Was the FBI too easy on Hillary Clinton? Was it too hard? Did Comey leave her looking like a liar? And how does Donald Trump look to you this week with his star, his praise for Saddam Hussein, his insults with Republican senators? We'll go in just a moment to Gromer Jeffers in Dallas. But we have to look at the Hillary Clinton case. So much anticipation of what would happen there, whether there would be criminal charges over her use of private email servers. FBI Director James Comey on Tuesday explained the FBI's recommendation that no charges be filed, cited the difference in this case from similar cases in the past that had been prosecuted.
All the cases prosecuted involved some combination of clearly intentional and willful mishandling of classified information or vast quantities of information exposed in such a way as to support an inference of intentional misconduct or indications of disloyalty to the United States or efforts to obstruct justice. We do not see those things here.
But was it a shiny, nothing wrong here? Well, no. At a hearing before the House on Thursday, Republican Trey Gowdy of South Carolina pressed Comey, the FBI director, about a number of Hillary Clinton's public assertions, public claims. Here's just a few of those where Comey had to come back and say, well, no, that wasn't true, that wasn't true, that wasn't true.
Secretary Clinton said, I did not email any classified material to anyone on my email. There is no classified material. Was that true?
There was classified material emailed.
Secretary Clinton said she used just one device. Was that true?
She used multiple devices during the 4 years of her term as Secretary of State.
Secretary Clinton said all work-related emails were returned to the State Department. Was that true?
No, we found work-related emails, thousands, that were not returned.
And that list went on. Donald Trump very ready to make the most of it. Here he was Tuesday night at a rally in North Carolina.
We now know that she lied to the country when she said she did not send classified information on her server. She lied.
Megan Murphy, what's the political fallout from this week?
You know, it feels a little hard in the wake of Dallas this morning to talk about the politics of this week, but
the politics are going to matter, though, for the way the whole country
absolutely.
Goes forward.
I agree. And the issue here is, you know, we all thought the story of the week would be, you know, Hillary Clinton and these emails and the conclusion that came out from the FBI director to recommend not bringing criminal charges. And what I think has been so interesting and has this has played out was, you know, what Donald Trump's sort of failure to truly capitalize on this and the sort of extraordinary hearing we saw yesterday where, yes, it was clear that there were instances where Hillary Clinton did not tell the truth about this server and the extent of the conduct that went on, I think, was surprising to so many of us who have covered this for so long. But he gave a very forceful defense of the decision yesterday. And I think he was able to really draw a line and saying, whatever you may think of my decision in such partisan world that we live in now, we conducted this fairly, we conducted this transparently, and I put my own name and my own reputation on the line for this decision. And actually, in some ways, he moved it away from Hillary Clinton, almost onto himself. And he is a very well-respected figure, someone who served, you know, under a Republican administration, has done these type of hearings many times before. And I think that sort of scene, that sort of setting that we had, in some ways actually benefited her in the sense of drawing a clear line of how they pursued that investigation, how they reached that decision.
Jack Beatty, how does Hillary Clinton come away from this? There had been so much speculation for so long about how this might come out, that it could even end up with criminal charges. It could even end up with this being a stumbling block that would somehow bring Bernie Sanders back onto the scene. Now, instead, people are talking about him endorsing her next week. We'll see. How does she come out of this week and this saga? I'm not saying it's over, but this was a pretty important week.
Yes, and barrages, millions of dollars worth of Republican attack ads have now been armed. I'm quoting here from an Iowa Democrat in Politico. Comey eviscerated all the excuses for Hillary and her team's behavior. Yeah, she wasn't invited. She wasn't indicted. Boy, what a relief. But all the excuses are now eviscerated. She has to answer why she deceived the American public on these questions. Politico finds five different ways that the Comey report contradicts statements she's made or her campaign has made. She's got to answer for that. And if she doesn't, well, she has the credibility crisis that she already has, where people simply don't trust her majority. That's going to grow worse, and to the point where it could become toxic and perhaps even fatal for her reelection prospects. I just think this couldn't be a worse week for her. The only way it could be worse is through an indictment. And in all of this, the only good piece of news for her, it seems to me, is the 287,000 jobs in the June report. That's good news.
Much higher than expected. Biggest in 8 months.
For the incumbent party, but not. But that's the only good news for her, it seems to me.
We're gonna go back to Dallas in just a moment, and Gromer Jeffress at the Dallas Morning News. That we have to touch just a little on Donald Trump here. There was a lot of talk this week about this star that was in some of his material. People said anti-Semitism. On Tuesday at a rally in North Carolina, Donald Trump was talking about former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein. He called him a bad guy, but then praised him on at least one front.
Saddam Hussein was a bad guy, right? Really bad guy. But you know what he did well? He killed terrorists. He did that so good, they didn't read him the rights.
He did that so good. They didn't read them the rights, as in Miranda rights, like why mess around with Miranda rights? People came down like a ton of bricks on him for that praise of Saddam Hussein at a rally in Cincinnati on Wednesday. He took issue with the news portrayals of those comments.
I said, bad guy, really bad guy, but he was good at one thing. He killed terrorists. Next day, Donald Trump loves Saddam Hussein. I don't love Saddam Hussein. I hate Saddam Hussein. But he was damn good at killing terrorists.
Megan Murphy, here's Donald Trump in this week of the controversy over the star, the Saddam Hussein business, his difficult meetings in Washington with Republican senators in particular. Take us through those and how each is playing out, Megan.
This is why I think it could have been a lot worse week for Hillary Clinton than we've seen. I mean, he was given a gift with this Comey statement, and yet we spent a lot of the cycle talking about the six-pointed star, talking about him praising Saddam Hussein.
Was it anti-Semitic to have it on his campaign literature and so on?
I mean, I think there's no question the way people took that and the fact that we had to spend 4 days discussing this and that he even defended saying I would never have taken it down just shows how unpredictable and why he still cannot rally the establishment fully behind him. You mentioned these meetings with senators where, you know, and
what happened
of the House.
There?
You know, he's singling out people for being losers. He's saying he
Mark
hasn't
Kirk,
trained.
Senator Kirk of Illinois.
He will, you know, hasn't trained his. He's basically threatened and saying, I haven't trained my fire on you yet. If you don't support me, you must go out there and saying I'm great. Look, this is a candidate like we've never seen before. But it is astounding, I think, to anyone involved in this world that in a week like this, where a disciplined message of which really hits home at his central message is that she's lying crooked Hillary, that if you can't even stay on that message in this kind of week, this is going to be a real weakness for this campaign. Now, again, today in the wake of Dallas, he's released a very measured statement. He's released a very sensitive statement, and clearly he was given guidance on that. But he did really drop the gift in the gift horse's mouth a little bit this week, in that he's made himself the center of a news cycle in not a very effective way.
Jack, you see this as not a great week for Hillary Clinton. You're watching Donald Trump as well. What do you see there?
Well, the New York Times in its news report speaks of the Cincinnati speech, from which you quoted, as a display of self-sabotage, as he went on and on, I think for 4.5 minutes, about the star and then to Saddam. You know, he does this again and again on Saddam. He's mentioned before how he was very tough on terrorists. You know who's tough on terrorists? Barack Obama. 27,000 ISIS fighters have been killed by the coalition since 2014. That's real tough on terrorism. And Trump says, we read them the Miranda. He's implying, you know.
I don't think drones read Miranda right.
Yeah, exactly. Or bombs or whatever we're doing there. And somehow he's trying to get the impression to his people that we're not doing anything against ISIS. 27,000 dead.
I want to go to Groomer Jeffers. He joins us from Dallas right now. In all of our minds, so much on Dallas in the aftermath of last night's terrible round of killings. As we speak, 5 police officers dead, 12 wounded, 2 civilians beyond them, and the whole country looking on in horror after the terrible videos that we saw earlier in the week. Groomer Jeffers is a columnist and political reporter at the Dallas Morning News. Joins us from Dallas. Mr. Jeffers, thanks very much for being here today.
No problem, Tom. How are you?
I'm okay. How is the city dealing with this shocking, stunning overnight slaughter?
Well, you know, as best as it can. I mean, there's a lot of shock. People are stunned. You know, this happened last night after a peaceful rally. There have been police protest rallies here before. Obviously, nothing like this. The deadliest, you know, police. A crime against police since 9/11. It's just an awful situation. There's a lot of support here, however. Condolences are coming in. You know, the president has weighed in, President Obama. As you mentioned before, Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton canceled campaign events today, and Texas Governor Greg Abbott is on his way to Dallas. But, you know, all that can't really soothe what has happened here. It's a really awful situation. And you can just imagine what the city's going through right now, not
terrible.
To mention the families of the victims.
Terrible. And the country right with you. Groomer, can you describe for us something of the setting in which this happened? We think of Dallas and shooting, and we think of the Shady Knoll and JFK.
Right.
But what was the scene last night? Where could this shooter have been in relation to the crowd of people on the street? What, on a hill, on a rooftop, and how far away?
Like on an elevated, somewhere elevated, you know, the top of a parking garage or building or whatever. And you just imagine you have sort of a rally and a protest with speeches or whatever. And then it breaks off into a march. And people are marching peacefully and carrying signs. And obviously the police has a strong presence there, because anything can happen, obviously. And they're there to make sure that there are no clashes with protesters and anti-protesters, which I might add, there was none of that. This was a really peaceful event.
But how were so many killed? I mean, CNN is now reporting, and I don't know what the latest is, you know, but that it was a single shooter. Earlier we heard multiple, or that was a suggestion.
Yeah, it's two. Police aren't confirming that, but that's what we believe now, or several sources believe. Again, positioning, he knew something about the march or the route, got in a position where he could basically just see everything and just pick officers off, and that's what the suspect did. And then he was holed up in a parking garage of a community college, El Centro Community College, when they pinned him down. And then you had that remarkable situation where when negotiations basically broke down, the police sent in a robot, one of those bomb.
A robot with a bomb? How does that work? It brought a bomb near the shooter, and then they explode the bomb, and he died?
Exactly. And that was done because they imagine this. I mean, you've already lost 5 police officers.
Yeah.
All these police officers have been shot, right?
Yeah.
And so they felt if they stormed in there, it would be more loss of life. The alternative was to send this robot in there, have him detonate a bomb, and take the guy out, and that's exactly what happened.
Did you, Groomer, in the Dallas community, African-American community, if you will, in advance of this? I mean, after the videos that came out of Baton Rouge and Minnesota, we heard a lot of anger. We heard it on this show. And I understand, but did you feel a kind of a urge for vengeance? Or does this look like just one guy who's gone off? Or read the community for us.
I mean, yeah, this looks like a lone wolf kind of situation. Obviously a disturbed guy who, quote, wanted to kill white cops, white policemen. You know, you look at the people in the crowd, they were concerned about the videos they saw earlier in the week.
Sure.
The situation outside.
To say the least, I expect, concerned.
Exactly. And no one was there with any sort of vengeance, you know, killing cops or anything like that, except obviously the shooter. But for the most part, people were gathering, trying to get their voices heard. And there was sort of a planning and process. They wanted to sort of keep this going. At the end of the protest, the speaking part of it, they were talking about what to do next. What do we do next week? How do we keep this issue out there? How do we bring the consciousness not only to the folks in Dallas but the nation? You know, things like that.
Will they have the courage and a way to keep doing that after this terrible round of killing last night?
Well, Tom, that's the other part of this. Whatever dialogue you would have had with, you know, after this situation outside of Minneapolis and Baton Rouge, and a willingness from folks to talk about it in a way that was constructive, that's going to be overshadowed by this terrible, terrible tragedy in Dallas. There's nowhere around it. I mean, you know, this shooter basically sort of took this to another level, and I think it's going to be a long time before we get back to a place where we can talk about this stuff without it being marred by what happened in Dallas.
I'm not sure we have a long time here. We need to get all that conversation geared up and going and headed toward action. But I understand this is a terrible setback and a terrible day, terrible week. Gromer Jeffers at Dallas Morning News, we're very grateful to you for joining us today. Thank you very much, Gromer.
All right. Have a good one.
You too. Megan Murphy, Washington Bureau Chief for Bloomberg News. Megan, thank you for being here on this tough day, and we appreciate all of your perspective. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much.
Our thanks to Del Quinton Wilbur, who joined us earlier from the Los Angeles Times. Jack Beattie, thanks to you as always, sir. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation, get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm on Twitter at Tom Ashbrook, NPR. This is On Point.